2015 is on pace to be the hottest year on record, and that's turning out to be an unexpected and perhaps unwanted boon to archaeologists. Receding glaciers and melting ice have uncovered areas that have been frozen for centuries. Artifacts that used to be inaccessible are now emerging from the deep freeze. Martin Callanan is an archaeologist at the Norwegian University of Science and Technology Museum in Trondheim, Norway. Martin, welcome to Here and Now.
Hello, nice to talk to you.
So you're up there in Norway, the land of glaciers. You're an archaeologist. How is climate change affecting your work up there?
It's making our life very busy at the moment with melting snow patches and glaciers. Each summer, late summer, we're checking that, you know, what has melted out and how much they've melted and so on. So it's making our life very busy each summer.
What are some of the big finds that archaeologists have come across that they wouldn't have found if not for this melting ice?
One of the special things with glaciers and snow patches as for archaeologists is that so much wood and textiles and bones are preserved there. So the types of things we're finding on these glaciers and ice patches are things like arrows, clothing, you know, textiles. We find things like shoes, you know, skis, bows and throwing darts, and even human remains. And these are this is a part of the past that we otherwise usually don't encounter. So it's a very special situation for us.
It sounds like you're saying that some of the artifacts are very old and some are more contemporary.
Yeah, we have both situations. I mean, as long as people have been using you know, highland areas and throughout the past, as in prehistory and in historical times. And as long as you have people in places, they're leaving things behind them, either on purpose or by accident. And we're finding, you know, both historical materials, but also very old archaeological materials. And it's telling us, you know, interesting story about the human past and how they've used these landscapes.
How much is this changing your business? You say that it's creating a new field within archaeology.
Yeah, let's say it's creating a new sort of sub-discipline. I mean, there are different sides to it. The one side is, you know, the day-to-day nuts and bolts of our work, the logistics of working in these areas. Very often they're very remote places and hard to get to, and we only have a small window to get into these sites than when they're accessible. It's not an everyday environment for archaeologists. But there is also the aspect that these finds are now telling us, you know, important information about, like, the human story of, you know, moving in the landscape, the technology that they used. And in that respect, there's a new sort of dimension to the sort of broader archaeological record coming out. And there are other challenges associated with this material, like how do we conserve the material when it comes into the laboratory? It's been frozen for, you know, hundreds or thousands of years. It's a new challenge for many museums, and how do we best organize ourselves, and how do we interpret them in regards to what we know about how people have lived? You know, so in that respect, it is a new subdiscipline of archaeology. Of course, we use the same methods as we always did, and we try to adapt to the situation. But there are new challenges for us in this field.
Yeah, let's talk about that. On the one hand, you're getting a lot more information that you wouldn't have had access to before. But what are archaeologists worried about?
You see, there's the backside of the coin. I mean, the good news is that these are very special artifacts, well-preserved. You know, ice is wonderful, really wonderful. If you were going to choose a place to preserve ancient remains, it would be an ice.
Oh, it's like a freezer.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's a stable, good environment for organic remains. So in that respect, it's fantastic. But that makes the loss of artifacts all the more worrying. You know, for every thing that we find or new discovery we make, we think that there are hundreds and thousands that are probably being lost. I mean, there are huge areas that have yet to be surveyed or to be checked or to be monitored. And around the world, the different archaeologists and managers have to prioritize about where they're going to search and what they're going to save and what they're going to let go.
Drought will dry up lakes that maybe have been keeping secrets for centuries. More flooding might either destroy or uncover historic sites. It's not just about glaciers, is it?
No, I think that we can look at this glacial archaeology as just one aspect of the sort of challenges that we're going to face and we are facing as, you know, as a discipline and also as a society. the thing about glacier archaeology is that it's happening now, and in that respect, it's a kind of a test case for, I mean, for what's coming and what is actually already happening. If you think about erosion and the vegetation is spreading, and all the flooding and the desert spreads, I mean, these processes are ongoing. But as I said, like the glacial archaeology is a very sort of visual evidence of what the changes that are taking place. And I think as a test case, the way that we manage to react to this now perhaps gives us an indication of how we're going to succeed with the challenges that lie ahead.
Martin Callinan is an archaeologist at the Norwegian University of Science and Technology. Martin, thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Well, as we just heard, it's not just about melting glaciers. A long drought has dropped the water level in Lake Mead, Nevada by 150 feet. And that has uncovered a ghost town called St. Thomas. It was submerged in 1938 after the Hoover Dam went up. St. Thomas used to be 75 feet underwater. Now you can walk right out to it. Steve Derone is a National Park Service archaeologist from Lake Mead National Recreation Area. And Steve, from what I understand, the last resident of St. Thomas refused to leave until the water was right at his front door.
Correct. Yeah, there were some individuals that didn't believe that the reservoir would ever get that full and that St. Thomas would get flooded. And so they waited to the last. And the last person supposedly left in a boat as the waters were lapping at his front door.
And what was this town all about? Was it a farming town, a mining town?
It was primarily started for farming. It was established in 1865. Residents came down from Salt Lake City. They were Mormon residents. They came down to establish Mormon communities in an attempt to create a chain of small communities from the Colorado River up to Salt Lake. The idea was to send riverboats up the Colorado River and then unload them at a location on the Colorado River referred to as Colville, and then they would be freighted up the Virgin and the Muddy Rivers and then on up into Salt Lake City, because the people in Salt Lake City were concerned about their supply lines coming from the east after the Civil War and such.
And as the lake levels fluctuated over the years, I understand the town and the ruins of the town were sort of uncovered and then covered again. And now it's completely open as a direct result of this drought. What does it look like today?
It's primarily foundations, concrete and stone foundations for most of the structures. And yeah, they've been exposed over the years probably four or five times since they were originally flooded in basically 1938 is when the town went under. And then it was exposed four or five times in the 40s and early 50s. And then it was exposed for a prolonged period in the mid-1960s as Lake Powell was filling. But then after Lake Powell was filled and Lake Mead filled up again, it hadn't been exposed again until the early 2000s when it was exposed by the ongoing drought.
Hmm. Have archaeologists been able to learn anything new over the years that might have been covered up to history all this time?
Yeah, it's interesting to look at the foundations and look at the how the construction techniques have changed over time. Some of the original structures were adobe, and those have all melted away. But then as time went on, you know, the concrete was brought in and became the dominant building material for foundations and such. And so some of the foundations you can look at and actually see the progression of houses and buildings that were added onto as the building techniques changed.
The fascinating thing about this is that St. Thomas is not the only artifact that has easier access now because of the drought. I've been reading about this World War II era B-29 bomber that crashed into the lake in the 1940s. And it used to be 300 feet underwater, and now it's so much shallower that divers can get down there. Tell us about that.
It's the B-29 that was being used for atmospheric testing back in the late 1940s. They were out doing one of their final runs for the day, and the lake was extremely calm, and so there was no wave action. So the pilot had a hard time determining how high he was off the lake, and he actually then hit the surface the plane tumbled a couple of times and it came to rest and everybody got out of the plane, but then it did sink to the bottom. Mm. Yeah.
Well, what do you make of all of this? With things like climate change and drought, your job really is different than it used to be. We've just heard about a field of archaeology that's responding to this sort of thing. Do you see it as an opportunity or do you see it as a risk that, say, some of these sites may be damaged as they're exposed?
I think there's both positive and negative aspects to it. It gives us an opportunity to visit areas that we haven't been able to visit before. As lake levels drop, there'll be areas exposed that haven't been exposed since the dam was built, and that'll give us an opportunity to actually get out and identify resources that have been submerged since basically the 1930s and learn about those resources.
National Park Service archaeologist Steve Durone, thanks very much.
Thank you.